It can be hard to see alternatives to the big box bright light grocery store chains. Walmart alone claimed more than a quarter of all grocery sales in the United States 2 years ago. But alternatives do exist, and in some communities, those include grocery co-ops, stores where shoppers are also members. Our first guest today is a fan of co-ops, a participant in them, and the author of a book about them. John Steinman is visiting co-ops in our region. His recent book is Grocery Story, The Promise of Food Co-ops in the Age of Grocery Giants. John is also the producer and host of Deconstructing Dinner, a syndicated radio show, podcast, and television series, obviously about food. John, thanks so much for joining us on the exchange.
Thanks for having me on the show.
By some standards, we live in a golden age of food, but I gather these are not your standards.
Well, you know, certainly as I describe in the book, the golden age of food that I'm speaking of is this food system that has miraculously extended the summer season all across the country, 365 days of the year, where we can get fresh food from anywhere in the country within usually a few days of delivery. And, you know, this is, to me, an amazing achievement that we've been able to arrive at in the history of humanity, really, that we can do this. And yet, of course, as many of your listeners, I'm sure, are aware, it comes at a cost. And this is something I start to explore in the book. You know, what is the impact of this long-distance food system on communities, on our food producers, on local economies? And, you know, really, this is about directing our attention to something that we engage with every single day, which is our experience at the grocery store, where we can look at the marvels of the grocery store and also look behind the shelves, too, and see, well, what is the impact of this way in which we access our food?
Was this an evolution for you over time? I mean, have you always cared this much about food and where it comes from, or was it something that sort of came to you in pieces?
I've cared about food for a long time. You know, I studied hotel and restaurant management for 4 years at university and immediately entered into the food industry. So I began really exploring food more intensely around 2006 when I began hosting my radio series, Deconstructing Dinner. But it took me a while to really look at the importance of the grocery store. In fact, even though I was a board director of my consumer-owned co-op where I live up in British Columbia, it still took me a while to really appreciate the power of the grocery store in the food system. And so it was really after looking at the rise of interest in more local food, more organic food, that I began to direct my attention about, you know, 5 years ago more intensely into the grocery store sector. But certainly the role of food in our economy and in our lives is something that I've been looking at quite intensely since 2006.
We have been talking about local food, it seems like, for several years here on the program. Do you think co-ops can provide something like a final link in the chain for people who can't seem to get to farmers markets, for example?
Yeah, and this is a big part of how I describe the importance of grocery stores. You know, farmers markets are one of the most important venues for food producers of all kinds, whether it's a local coffee roaster or a baker or a vegetable producer. It's one of the most important venues to ensure that when we shop for our food, the entire dollar in that case is ending up in the pockets of that producer. But of course, as you mentioned, farmers markets are generally happening only once a week, maybe twice a week at best. And as I describe in the book too, many of the people selling at farmers markets love being there. There are many more that would rather be at home at the farm, taking the day off, and being able to perhaps sell their product into one of those spaces where we are shopping more of the time and that are open 7 days a week. And so, you know, really the role of a grocery store, particularly a food co-op, has been to how do we, or at least I guess you could say a question, how do we turn our grocery store into a 7 day a week farmer's market?
You have lots of experience with grocery co-ops. I don't know if I mentioned that you're on the board of a co-op or were for several, 10 years, it looks like, at the Kootenay Co-op, at Canada's largest independent retail consumer food co-op, served as board president even. Mm-hmm. You have lots of experience with co-ops. For the person who's never set foot in a co-op, because not every town has one, what's the basic scheme?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the first thing to just get out of the way, because often food co-ops, for those who are aware of them, might think that they're only available to the people who are members, or as some call owners, because technically people who are members are owners of that store. Co-ops all across the country, except for maybe a handful, are open to every single person in a community to walk in, whether you're a member, owner, or not. As an owner, though, you become a shareholder in your grocery store. So, for example, myself, I am an owner of my grocery store alongside 14,000 other people in my community. And that allows me to, once a year, vote for my board of directors. And it also gives me more of a voice in the future of my grocery store. And so the co-op model allows for consumers, in this case, to become a shareholder. So I spent $50 as an investment. That's a share price that whenever I leave the co-op, I get that return to me. And that's my investment into becoming an owner. And the co-op model is effectively democratizing our economy. It allows us to participate in a democratic process with something as important as our grocery store. But the co-op model is applied to other areas in our lives too, like credit unions are co-ops. REI is the largest consumer co-op, or one of them certainly here in the country. So this model allows for us to be more engaged democratically in the services and the goods that are really important to us.
John Steinman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an aficionado and member of food co-ops. He's written a book about them called Grocery Story, The Promise of Food Co-ops in the Age of Grocery Giants. He's from Nelson, B.C., and visiting a couple of co-ops in our region, has already been to Medford and Ashland, on his way to Coos Bay tomorrow. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Questions, comments, thoughts, experiences with food co-ops if you're a member. We'd love to hear from you, even if you're not a member. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's underscore the member, non-member part. You can shop at a co-op, whether you're a member or not.
Anyone can shop at a co-op, and this is something that, like I say, can often be misunderstood. And for those who are owners, often what comes with that certainly is the thrill of knowing that you own your grocery store. I mean, when I shop at my co-op, for example, and I walk into the produce department, if I'm looking for a product on the shelf, I'll walk up to one of my staff members there at the co-op. And one thing I always make sure I don't say is, hey, do you folks have any bananas from Equal Exchange today? I'll actually change that language and say, hey, do we have any bananas from Equal Exchange today?
Waiting for the pronoun. Huh?
Yeah. And, you know, this is something that we don't get a chance to do in everywhere we shop. And at a food co-op, this is something where, you know, it's a very different experience of ownership. And like I say, you know, anyone can shop at a co-op, and co-ops are full service grocery stores. And that's another thing that can often be misunderstood. Often they're thought to be a farm market or a buying club, or you have to invest your time as a worker in order to shop at the store. And that's not true. You know, most food co-ops now are just like any full service grocery store across the country.
Now, there's an interesting trend though, that you point out in the book, which I hadn't heard about before. The fact that while we're talking about where people buy their groceries to prepare their own foods, we're talking about Americans starting in 2010, it appears, like, dined out more often than they ate in, or at least ordered food from somebody else's preparation. And you got the growth of the services that will deliver to people. So this seems like a challenge to any grocery store.
Yeah, certainly. Every type of grocery store now is looking at evolving into more home delivery services, ready to pick up groceries at the store that you order online. Co-ops are not immune to this. Co-ops are also starting to participate in this, but not nearly as much as other grocers. I mean, I think the co-op shopper is generally someone who really values that experience of walking into the store. You know, a grocery co-op is offering more than just products on a shelf. It's really offering also a community experience, and I think that draws a lot of folks to that co-op. Certainly, that was my experience at the Ashland Food Co-op. But yeah, I mean, the trends are changing. Certainly one of the things that we're seeing in grocery is an interest to buy more and more prepared foods. And so this is something that often food co-ops are able to set themselves apart from, because most food co-ops now have large kitchens inside those stores, which means they're able to prepare foods right there on site rather than get them from some centralized commercial kitchen somewhere else. And so that's often setting co-ops apart as far as food quality and the ability for a co-op to take surplus product off of the shelves, for example, in the produce department or dairy or meat departments, put those into the kitchen and have those available for sale right away that day in prepared foods. And so co-ops are now using that as a way to reduce the amount of waste going out the back of the store because of the kitchens that are inside these co-ops.
So it's like the grocery store saying, would you like to see today's specials?
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of thing. Let's take a phone call here. We have Mark in Reading on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with John Steinman, the author of Grocery Story.
Yes. Are you familiar with the co-op system in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota?
So I did get a chance to visit the Twin Cities, and that was back as part of my early part of this book tour that I'm on right now. I've been across the entire country, and the Twin Cities food co-ops are a marvel, something that many people are quite surprised by. In that city alone, there are 9 different food co-ops with over 15 locations in the metropolitan area of Minneapolis-St. Paul. It's probably the highest concentration of individual independent food co-ops of any urban center in the country. And it's an example of what a city could look like with many food co-ops, who also all support a regional cooperatively owned distributor. So that distributor there is taking in products from the entire upper Midwest and helping distribute those into food co-ops. It's one of the last remaining distributors of its kind, and it's there in part because of the support of those individual, independently owned food co-ops there. So I'd say, yeah, that the Twin Cities really is a model for the rest of the country to look to as far as what's possible.
Mark, have you had a chance to explore those yourself?
I lived there in the mid-70s, and I was just wondering if it was still active, because it was extremely active then.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it certainly is.
Still is, and growing.
The one I was a member at, they didn't have members. They just had workers and non-workers. And if you worked a certain number of hours each month, then you got a discount. If not, then you didn't. Unless you were a senior citizen, then you didn't have to do any work.
Okay. Well, it's a well-established system. Thanks for bringing that up, Mark. It's a great topic. So are you aware of that system still being in place, workers and non-workers?
Yeah. So this is something that allowed co-ops to really gain a foothold, you know, back in the 70s and even well into the 1980s, where members, shoppers at food co-ops were required to put in a few hours of work. And often that meant cutting cheese in the back and preparing smaller bags of nuts to put out on the shelf. Most of those programs have been done away with, in part because of labor laws catching up to co-ops. And it's also a program that's been hard to manage. And so most co-ops have now done away with those programs. They act much more like any other grocery store. As an owner, you don't have to put in any time into the store. There are a few that still offer that as an option across the country, which I describe in my book. But most co-ops have evolved into full-service grocery stores that run like any other business.
John Steinman, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange from Nelson, British Columbia, talking about co-ops, which is really his sweet spot, his wheelhouse. His book is called Grocery Story, The Promise of Food Co-ops in the Age of Grocery Giants. You can join our conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. There's quite a bit of history in the book. We start with A&P, which I remember shopping at as a kid, now defunct, but many other chains came to prominence. As those grocery chains got bigger, what happened to the payments to the farmers who grow the products within the stores?
Well, certainly as the chains became larger and larger and consolidated over the most of the 20th century, it was in part one of the reasons why the share that a farmer receives at the end of the day started to decrease. So as I describe in the book, in 1950, farmers were receiving about 40 cents of a dollar that we were spending at a grocery store. Today, on average, farmers are receiving about 14 cents, 1/4 of a grocery dollar. Now, that doesn't necessarily translate to a farmer receiving less for their product. What it does definitely translate to is that the farmer has less power in the marketplace because they are responsible for less of that final food dollar. And so this is something that has happened because our food system has become more long distance. There are more costs associated with getting food from farm to plate. So one of the things I describe in the book is a way to reverse this and to give farmers more power in the marketplace, and not just farmers, but anyone producing food, is to shrink the distance between where that food is being produced and where it's being sold. And often food co-ops are focusing much more of their attention on trying to shrink that distance, bring product in from the region, which in turn allows us as consumers to know that the farmer is receiving more of the food dollar, as well as having more power in the marketplace to determine prices and determine terms and conditions.
You run through not just the history of the chains, obviously, but also the history of co-ops, which appear to have had several waves in American history. Has the model been tinkered with much over the years?
I think the model's been refined. It's certainly become more streamlined. You know, one of the things, too, that has happened within the food co-op movement is in the early 2000s, and particularly more recently in the past 10 years, food co-ops all across the country, the largest of them, about 150, have banded together to consolidate some of their purchasing power, their planning and organizing, sharing data with one another as well. And they've done this through another co-op that they all own called National Co-op Grocers. And this has supported co-ops in remaining competitive as more and more natural food chains and even the large dominant chains carry a lot of the same products that co-ops carry. And so this has been a way for co-ops to evolve into the 21st century. And what we're now seeing is a whole new wave of food co-op development. And so rather than the co-ops of the 1970s beginning as buying clubs, informal stores eventually, Today, the new food co-ops that are emerging, like the Medford Food Co-op, are emerging directly into the store format. And so that's a new wave that has happened only in the past 10 to 15 years. And so there are now 100 co-ops in development across the country. In the past 11 years, 145 have opened up. Three quarters of those are still in business with their doors open. So that's, I think, the newest change that we're seeing in food co-ops is this new type of co-op that's emerging. Some that are not just focused on natural and organic foods, and I think that's important. Co-ops are not synonymous with that. Co-ops are really there to serve whatever the community needs in their grocery store. And so we're starting to see more and more food co-ops carrying a blend of more accessible, conventional, familiar brands alongside those natural, organic, and local products.
So obviously lots of options for the shopper just in terms of what is available to buy. But what about prices? I mean, are people who want their food cheap and that's their only standard, are they going to end up shopping at a co-op?
Well, you know, I think if price is all what we're looking for in our grocery shopping experience, one of the challenges of shopping at most food co-ops is that co-ops are offering foods that are generally more expensive to produce. You know, so organic food is a good example. Whether you walk into a Walmart or a Kroger or Fred Meyer and you look at organic and conventional versions, often the organic is still more expensive because it simply costs more to produce. The other thing that co-ops are trying to do is ensure that the people producing food, whether it's locally or on the other side of the planet, they're trying to ensure that those people are being paid fairly. And so when we walk into a co-op, we might see prices that are a little higher for that local product because that's generally what that producer needs in order to sustain what they're doing. What we're also starting to see, though, as co-ops increase their buying power and grow, which is what's happening with many co-ops, prices are starting to come down as well. And there's a co-op up in Bellingham, Washington, that once a year now walks into all of their competitors and compares identical products, hundreds of them across the board, and has noticed overall, when you total up each of those products, that they are cheaper than any of their competitors. And so we're starting to also see this in food co-ops. If you're comparing identical products in a co-op to any other large grocer, there's a good chance you're going to find lower products. And part of that is that the grocer, as a co-op, is not trying to gouge its consumers. It's not trying to take advantage of consumers. Every dollar of profit at the co-op goes right back into the business, and in some cases, right back into the pockets of owners based on what they purchased throughout the year.
With you talk about the grow-ups, co-ops growing in buying power, mm-hmm. though, and prices in some cases coming down, though. But, I mean, that's not coming at the expense of farmers, I would hope or think.
No, not generally. I mean, it depends what you're buying. I think, you know, one of the things co-ops also offer are a lot of those familiar brands that you can find on many of the store shelves. And those are products that are coming from all over the world. They're just as processed as any other product. And so often if we're buying products that are coming from abroad, you know, there's a greater chance that there is less support for that food producer. That's, of course, not the case when you start to look at more farm direct exchange or fair trade products. But certainly co-ops are not immune to food products not translating to farmers receiving a fair share. Food co-ops, though, are paying a whole lot more attention to that than what I've seen than any other type of grocery store to ensure that that food producer is being paid fairly.
Some of the domain that used to be the domain of co-ops, mm-hmm. the big chain stores have figured out that as well. I mean, the organic sections at conventional grocery stores are growing, things like that. So are co-ops feeling a bit of a pinch from the people that they really were formed in response to?
They are, you know, and I've visited co-ops now, 120 of them since April across the country. And many, certainly in even recent times, have watched natural food retailers in particular open up blocks away and their sales decline. And so this is part of what motivated the book, is to help describe how changing the food system is not just about walking into a store and choosing a product based on where it's from and who grew it and how it was produced. It really is also about asking the question, what's the impact of this store that I'm buying this product in? And when I choose where to buy this product, what is the impact of that? And so, you know, on the back of my tour van, I have a question. So anybody who's stuck behind me on the highway is going to be confronted with this question. And the question is, who owns your grocery store? And to me, this is fundamental in looking at the impact of how that grocery store treats its suppliers, how they integrate into the food system, their role within the food system. And one of the challenges of any grocer that is not located within our community, when we shop at that store, is we are effectively sending our grocery dollars, our community's wealth, outside of the community. And so when we have a co-op that is locally owned, we are ensuring that more of that grocery dollar remains within the community. And so this is a question I'm really hoping is added to this long list of concerns. The where is the food produced, who grew it, and also where am I buying this product?
What advice do you have for people who are thinking of joining or starting a co-op?
Well, if there's a food co-op in your area, my advice is check it out, you know, if you haven't already. Certainly, if you're already a co-op shopper, one of the things I certainly encourage is investing more of your food dollars in a food co-op, because what you're doing is investing your dollars in your community. And if there is no food co-op in your community, one of the most amazing things that's happened in the past 10 years is there are now abundant resources to help communities start food co-ops. There's an organization called the Food Co-op Initiative that helps new co-ops engage with their community and go through what's now quite a formula of how you build a community-owned grocery store. And that's happening across the country, and there are inspiring stories in and around here. You know, I'll be up in Silverton, Oregon, where there's a community up there trying to build a community-owned grocery store, and there are over 100 of them across the country now in development.
About a minute left here. Can you still be surprised by what you find in co-ops? Are you still getting little nuggets of, wow, I didn't think about that before?
Yeah, you know, I've visited 120 plus co-ops now, and there is some strong similarities among all of them. And one thing, though, that always surprises me is just how unique each co-op is. When I walk into a co-op, I get a really strong sense right away of what this community that I'm in is about. And it's amazing the way grocery stores that are cooperatively owned adapt to their community, adapt to their community's needs. And that continues to surprise me, despite seeing as many as I've seen.
John Steinman lives in Nelson, BC. He's a member of the Kootenay Co-op, which is Canada's largest independent retail consumer food co-op, was the board president for a couple of years. He hosts and produces Deconstructing Dinner, which is a radio show, podcast, and a streaming television series, and an annual film festival. And he'll be at the co-op in Coos Bay when? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yeah. I'll be giving a talk at the library tomorrow night and hanging out in the store during the day.
The book is called Grocery Story, The Promise of Food Co-ops in the Age of Grocery Giants. John Steinman, thanks for writing it. Thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Short break on The Exchange. When we come back, Marketplace Tech, followed by Underground History and Bourbon Archaeology. Stay tuned.